I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Rich B. from Ocean City, Maryland. Rich, you will be unmuted and you can begin. Thank you.
Thank you. And what an awesome power you have to unmute someone. My name is Rich. I'm an alcoholic and my sobriety date is August the 30th of 04, so that nobody's sitting around doing math. That makes me in my 16th year of sobriety and trying to practice these principles as a way, as a method, right, of living my life. I like talking about steps four and five because they were a big deal in my life. Turns out I'm a resentment machine, and that the only tool I had for those, you know, was drinking, and all the other things that went along with that. You guys have presented me with some other tools, and I had no idea, you know, what was really going on, and that I basically operated, you know, I went through life almost like a Cro-Magnon, right? And what that means is, if, you know, in high school or college where I did the bulk of my drinking, it looked like this, right? You looked at my girlfriend, right? You looked at my girl, man. You did this, right, on the soccer field. Right? You did this at the party, right? It's almost like a caveman, right? Whatever was upsetting me, right, me punch guy, right? You look at my girl, me punch you, right? That's a pretty primitive, stupid way to live life, but it was the best that I had, you know, as a drunk, and I had no idea what was going on with that. By the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, that's called when you punch somebody just trying to, you know, figure out your emotions and stuff, they call that second degree assault in Maryland. Just punching somebody. Police take that stuff really seriously. They don't understand that I'm just kind of conflicted. I've got all these emotions. I don't know what they are. I operate on like a, you know, 15-year-old level. And it's the best I've got, right? And by the time I got to AA, I got a whole bunch of these convictions that I wish I didn't. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous after a final arrest in San Diego. I went to the federal penitentiary with 27 kilos of cocaine, spent a long time in there, got out, ran around to a bunch of states trying to avoid some other warrants, made it into Alcoholics Anonymous because I was dying at 29, had my liver biopsied, a fatty spot taken out. No one in my family was speak. My mother had not been able to look at me in my eyeballs for over a decade. I'm her only son. I'm her oldest child. I have one little sister. It takes a lot to get a mother to not be able to look at you, right? But that I managed to pull that off, right, with my drinking. My little sister had not spoken to me in 6.5 years. I had warrants in 3 states, California, Colorado, and Maryland when I walked in your doors. I had all kinds of driver's licenses, you know, I had 5 or 6 licenses. None of them had my real name, you know, didn't match up with the social security or registration. What else? IRS hadn't paid taxes for a long time because when you're in the drug business, you don't exactly keep a log of that. And it's why I was so resistant to steps 4 and 5, right? I'm not an idiot. You know, I'm a lot of things, but not stupid. And the 4th step was about writing things down. And in my line of work, that's called a paper trail. Right. And that's how I just got out of federal prison when I got to you, and you guys want me to write things down. Seemed like a very bad idea. And but you talked about the fact that this kind of holds the keys to the future. Right. Is this 4th and 5th step. And I was just at that place. I believe that alcohol, I'm summing up a very long drinking story really quick, in that I believe that alcohol did exactly what it was supposed to do in my life. And that was to beat the crap out of me till it got me to a place where I went, okay, right? That's it. To your steps. You're like, hey, we're AA. All we have is 12 steps, right? We don't have any magic around here. We got nothing more. We got nothing less. We got 12 steps. Would you like to try them? Right. And by the way, that's what, you know, Bill says is the job of a sponsor. He says our only job is an adequate presentation of the steps, right? And you guys offered me that. You're like, would you like to? And I'm like, whoa, right? And steps 4 and 5, what they are, I'm very familiar with evidence because I'm, you know, I've been a defendant a lot. And the way that my sponsor explained it to me, he said, step 4 is the first piece of physical evidence that you've actually taken a third step, right? Because the third step, I made a decision to try AA, right? That's it, right? Step 3, would you like to make a decision to try AA, right? Yes or no? We'll talk about God later. We'll talk about what you think about God later, Rich. Nobody could care less at step 3, what you think about God. It's clear you don't understand anything about you. You wouldn't be in the condition you're in, right? If you knew or had any valid experience with the higher power, you wouldn't be sitting here, right? So let's just start on these steps, right? And I was at that place because alcohol really did its job and it did it well on me. And I went, okay, right? And it turns out that, Alcoholics Anonymous is an amazing program of action for people that are out of programs of action, right? And as long as I knew a way that I could put this off, I was going to do it. And I got to that place where I couldn't. And he said, well, you know, just write down, you know, who you're resentful towards, right? And the cause. And I'm trying to explain to my sponsor that I don't have any resentments. And he said, okay, well, then just write down who you hate and why you hate them. And I said, well, why didn't you say so? I mean, that's easy, right? And I started firing off the list, right? And what the heck, you know, let's have some fun. I'll do a couple. You know, these are real ones, right? And it was like, you know, Melissa, you know, why you mad? Why you hate Melissa, right? Oh, been living with me the last couple of months, snorting all my cocaine, drinking everything out of the refrigerator, doesn't contribute to rent. Pretty sure she's cheating on me with some other dude at work after she doesn't come home when she says she is. He's like, okay, good, good, good. You're doing great, right? And he pointed out to me that, you know, back when we had, you know, real in-person meetings, which we're starting to have in Ocean City, by the way, my home group's meeting in person on Tuesday nights. Last night we had 26 people, 22 of them went out to dinner for fellowship. I've never had a better meal in my life than the crummy Chinese place we go to after our Tuesday meeting because I was with you guys for the first time in over 3 months. Our last meeting was March 10th, and I was like sitting in my home group last night crying, just so happy to be there and to go out and have some crappy Chinese food with you people because you guys in AA make everything in my life first class. So anyways, he pointed out to me, he's like, you're used to taking inventory. Right? Everybody in AA takes inventory. Most members just do it after the meeting, standing out front this first door, smoking a cigarette, right? We're out there talking, and we're going, you know, where was Liz when they were reading how it works? She wasn't even in the meeting. She's up, she's down. She's so distracting. I wish Liz would do. Who's this guy from Ocean City, Maryland? Rich, who brought in the ball guy to talk about 4 and 5? I don't even know. Why do you do 4 and 5? You know, what an idiot. I hate bald people. You know, why would you bring in a guy from Ocean City? We know everything in Philadelphia. You don't need to write. That's inventory, right? Write it down. Stupid bald guy from Ocean City talking about steps 4 and 5, doesn't know what he's talking about, right? We're used to doing it. What I'm not used to doing is putting it on paper, right? And after Melissa, there was Stephanie. And guess what Stephanie did? Snorting all my cocaine, spending all my money, not paying any rent, drinking all the beer, leaving me for another guy, right? Next name, same thing, right? And it goes on and on and on and on. And it turns out at the end of this process, I mean, spoiler alert, right? The big thing that you figure out is that I'm the common denominator, right? In your case, you're going to figure you're the common. There's all these names, and then there's you, right? The one person that has something. Most of them don't even know each other, but they've got one thing in common, me, right? And what I like about 4 and 5, my experience is a fourth step is only as good as the fifth step listener, right? And my, the way we do it, and please pay attention to those words, right? The way we do it, so, you know, we tend to only know like the way we do it, right? And it's not the way, it's not the right way, it's none of that. You know, I've seen lots of people do four steps all kinds of ways. And it seems to me, from what I've observed, right, this is the only wrong way to do it is not to do it, right? And when I went through my evangelical period, which is years 3 to 5, right? When you're sober between years 3 and 5, it's the event that's where, you know, you're running around beating everybody over the head with the big book. Have you seen this? It's right in the book. It's a, haven't you? Right. What do you mean the 12 and 12? You can't do steps out of the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 was written 15 years after. It's a series of essays where Bill had taken a writing class and he's pontificating on the steps. He's not telling you how to take them, when to take them, and where to take, right? And I got a head full of all this, right? You know, just enough about AA from year 3 to 5 to be really dangerous was certainly what you had in me. And I call that the evangelical period. And I think it's wonderful because what that means is we're so full of AA. We're so excited about this thing that just saved our lives. And we want to pass it on just the way we got it, right? And we're under the false belief that the way we got it is the only way, right? Until we stick around a little longer and figure out that some of these other ways, right, seem to work. My arch nemesis, right, in Ocean City was this little guy, Kurt. And Kurt was a avid 12 and 12er. You ever met those people? They're the enemy of the big booker, right? And they see things like, you know, I've never read the big book. I never take any steps out of the big. What you do is you read the step out of the 12 and 12 for 10 days and answer all, you know, they got their own method, right? And you know what he was doing? I didn't know this until this process, right, of going through it, putting Kurt there. What he was doing was challenging my experience, right? It was fear-based, right? It was, oh my gosh, does this somehow take away from the way I did the steps out of the big book? Did I do them wrong? Was my experience not valid? Is there other ways to get to, oh my gosh, right? And you know, the kicker was the problem, right, with Kurt doing it all wrong. I mean, it was all wrong the way he did it out of the 12 to 12. The problem was when my sponsor looked at me, the fifth step listener, and goes, you know, it's hard for me to get around the fact that, you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, Kurt's 32 years sober. He's been married for like 29 years successfully. He runs an amazing, you know, business. He's the guy's just really happy and sober for a long time. What do you make of that? And I don't know if you've noticed that, right? Sometimes when we look around after this inventory, I have that moment where I'm like, maybe they're right, right? Maybe there's other things. So I don't even know how we got off on the Kurt story, but at the end of the inventory, you know what I had to do was go to Kurt, right? And say, hey, would you please take me through the 12 steps your way out of the 12 to 12? I'd like to try that experience, right? So that maybe I could have an opinion based on fact, because that's another thing about an alcoholic of my variety I learned from steps 4 and 5. Not having an experience with something has never stopped me from having an opinion on it, right? I have opinions on all kinds of things I know nothing about and I've had no experience with. I just know they're wrong or dumb or, you know, stupid. And one of the really cool things you guys suggested to me in my first couple of years was that if anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, Rich, invites you to do anything spiritual, you just say, yes, thank you for inviting me. And then go check it out. And I will tell you that that landed me in a Buddhist monastery in West Virginia for about 4 months, where you have to take a 20-pound bag of rice, and that's your donation to the Sangha, which is the community of monks. And that you sit in there, right? And I learn all about meditation, and that's your, you know, contribution. That's what we eat, right? Is rice each night, and these wonderful, beautiful, soft, compassionate monks taught me a little bit about being quiet, and they taught me about a Buddhist principle, and a saying, right, from their thing. It's just their experience, which is they're talking about a wood pile. And they say that which is rained on and covered rots, right? A wood pile, think about it. A wet wood pile of rain, nasty, all wet. And you put a black tarp over top of that wood pile. and it just sits and the maggots get in there and that wood, and they say, but that which is rained on and uncovered dries and becomes useful, right? And I don't need to explain to anybody on this call that that wood pile, right, is the pit of my stomach and everything inside of me that I've done my whole life, that resentment, that fear, that sex behavior, all of it, right, that I've been just trying to cover, right? And in steps 4 and 5, I'm going to get this stuff out into the sunlight and I'm going to dry and become useful. And I like talking about that because guess when those guys thought about that? A couple of thousand years before Christ, a couple of thousand years before we'd ever heard of Bill and Bob, right? So this spiritual principle in steps 4 and 5 isn't new, it isn't unique, and it's been working for centuries, right? And who am I, you know, to question something like that, right? And of course, the Christians have their way of doing it, and the Catholics, and they'll call it something different, confession, and you go do that. And I mean, just about every spiritual path that I've ever seen has some form of coming clean, right? And getting, the other part of it is getting what I call a neutral third party perspective on my life. It allows that fifth step listener to see me in a way that I can never, ever, ever see me. And, you know, I've heard it said in AA, it's kind of like, you know, if you grade your own paper, you always give yourself an A or a B, right? Like, I just shouldn't be allowed to grade my own paper because it's not fair. And that's the value. So the way that we do it is I write down, you know, who I hate in my case and why I hate them. And then my sponsor's sitting right there next to me, right? And while this is going on, and I've done this with guys that can't write, you know, can't read, can't write. And I say, you talk, I'll write, you know. But it's a wee deal. I've heard of people saying, you go write your 4-step and bring it back to me. And we'll sit down and talk once you've got it all done. I bet that works great for some people, right? I would have never done. I needed him like sitting next to me, you know, going, okay, who's next? Good job, buddy. Who's next? Who's next, right? And boom, and boom, and I'm just going, and my sponsor's sitting. And after we did all of that, he explained something to me that is the coolest thing that has ever happened in my life. It turns out that every time I want to punch you in your stupid face, right, which is what goes through my mind, it's only for 1 of 4 reasons, right? Whatever I perceive, and by the way, it doesn't even matter if you've really done it, right? Whatever I perceive you've done has somehow threatened my delicate little self-esteem, my ambitions, right? Something I'm trying to achieve or I want, my pocketbook. You've threatened my financial well-being, right? Which is tentative at best when I'm getting sober, right? I already owe everybody, right? I'm already broke. I'm already scared to death, right? Or you're messing with one of my personal relationships, maybe even a sexual relationship. Woo, right? Now we're talking punch in face, right? So basically, does everybody know what a marionette is, right? It's a type of puppet that's got a string. I want you to imagine a string on each of your hands, right? And on each of your feet. And on this hand, right, is that's the self-esteem string. And when I'm just looking at who's on the screen in front of me so that I don't feel completely crazy sitting in a room talking to myself, by the way. So if I name a name, it's just because you're there. And if Regina pulls on that self-esteem, you know, string, she gets a reaction out of the stupid puppet. That's me, right? And then guess what? Liz says, I'm not hiring you. You've got 36 convictions. You're a deadbeat piece of crap. Whoa. She's pulling on a couple of strings, right? My ambition to have a job, my pocketbook. Now my foot's going, my hand's going, and guess what? You're watching the stupid monkey dance. And it goes on to the next pages to talk about the world and its people really controlled us, right? Isn't that amazing? I mean, if I say nothing else, if I learn nothing else about myself in my entire time in Alcoholics Anonymous, you cannot get a rise. You can't get the monkey to dance if you don't pull on one of those 4 strings, right? And here's the other thing. What you're saying usually if it gets a good reaction on those strings, it's because there's some truth in it, right? And that's why it bothers me. Because when you say things to me that aren't true, they don't even faze me. When they go, hey, you're stupid. I go, okay. Doesn't faze me because I know that's not true. I've got more degrees than a rectal thermometer, man. And you know what we do with those, right? They're useless as far as being sober, but being smart's never mind. I've never had a B. I don't know what a B looks like, right? That's why it was so hard for me to get to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I thought I knew everything because I'm smart, right? That's like the death of the alcoholic, you know? But when you say things that are, they don't affect, it's that truth, man, that hits me. And learning and having a second, I don't know that this is 100% true, but that's never stopped me from saying anything. I heard it said, and my experience bears it out, that for every year we're sober, we get 1 second between when something happens, an outside event happens, right? You say something to me and I have to open my mouth and say something back or react, right? So now I'm in my 16th year. I got 16 seconds, right? From when Liz says something to me that's offensive, I got 16 seconds to decide, do I really need to respond? Is this a good time to exercise some restraint of pen and tongue? Do I want to let Liz make the monkey dance? Do I want to give her control to work the marionette? What should I do? What's an appropriate response rather than a reaction, right? To turn, right? That's one of our spiritual verbs. Hey, God, help direct me into a right. I got 16 seconds now, right? There's people on this call that get 20, 30, 40, 50s. I can't wait. Can you imagine how much less I'm going to put my foot in my mouth when I get 20 seconds and 30 seconds to before I open my stupid mouth at work or at home or around the kids or my wife or wherever it is, right? And all of that is learned in this fourth and fifth. That is a new monumental way to live life for a drunk like me, is to understand actually what's happening. Why do I do what I do? Why does the Cro-Magnon punch in face, right? And so that's that third column, right? With my sponsor would say things like, you know, hey, this first girl, right, that I had on there that I told you about, what do you think that affects when she does, you know, all your cocaine and drinks all your liquor and, you know, you don't really feel like she's loyal to you and steals your money, you know, goes out once all the drugs and the booze are gone with some other guy. And it turns out with him talking it through with me, because I couldn't have made the connections, it's what we call a quadruple banger, right? Like I think of an engine, right? All four cylinders are firing. She has, you know, I have an ambition to be in a successful relationship with a woman. That's one of my ambitions. And it's not working, right? She's threatening my financial well-being, my self-esteem. She's making me look like a fool. She's using me. She's cheating on me. She's threatening the relationship itself, right? It's hitting on all four. Of course this is bothering me. These are the things that a human being, that make up a human being. These are like our natural instincts that, you know, Bill talks about in that 12 and 12, that they tend to run awry, right? That's what he says. These are natural instincts run awry. None of these things. The fourth and fifth step for me was not about being a good guy, a bad guy. We didn't even use those words, right? We're not doing this to figure out if I'm good or bad or right or wrong. None of that, right? It's just what makes me tick, right? Who am I? What are the driving forces in my life? Am I living a God-centered based life, or am I living life based upon, right, my self-esteem, self-esteem, my money, my ambitions, my personal relationships, my sexual desires, right? A whole lot of me, self, and all four of those things. And great information, right, for a guy like me. And the other thing that I learned, there's a book called Not God by Ernest Kurtz. I really recommend it. Everybody, in case you haven't noticed, God just gave us all about 3 extra months to work on step 11, which I'm not going to talk about tonight, but we're supposed to just be sitting home, working on prayer, meditation, spiritual reading, your AA program, helping others, sponsoring others. Like, hey, you got to thinking your job was really important, Rich, being a big time trial lawyer, saving people's lives. I'm in there fighting for justice. You got to thinking that that was, you know, raising those two little girls, going on vacation, you know, thought you were pretty big shit, didn't you? Let me tell you what's going to happen. COVID-19, you're going to stay home and do nothing but read spiritual books and get reconnected with me. I've really missed you, Rich. Here's a little message from God, right? And that's how I've chosen to look at this. Again, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I know that that's my choice of viewing this thing. And I've gotten to have all kinds of time reading stuff I wouldn't have time to read. And if you have some time on your hands, Not God is amazing. And Bill Wilson does his fifth step with a guy named Father Ed Dowling. And when Bill does his fifth step with Ed Dowling, he lays all the stuff down that, you know, we do. I call it the confessional part of, you know, the fifth step. I stole this. I broke into this house. I slept with this girl. I slept with this guy. I, you know, was in the shower when I was 15 in soccer, you know, and I in the men's shower, and our butts bumped while we were in the shower. Does that make me gay? And I'm crying and confused, and I'm laying it all down and figuring out what's what, right? Going through, and this is the stuff I'm horrified to talk about, right? And trust me, I'm keeping it general right now, right? But we spill that stuff that we think is amazing, right? And Bill does that. And when that's all over, that turns out to be the thing I'm afraid to do. And that's the least important part of the fourth step, because Father Ed Dowling looks at Bill and he goes, you know, Bill, that's great. But it's not the things that men and women do and have done that keep them drunk. It's the things they've left undone. Are you kidding me? It's not the things that we've done. It's the things we've left undone. And that revolutionized my world, that line out of the book, Not God, of Bill's fourth and fifth step, because I was almost a college graduate. I had a 3.9 GPA when I got kicked out halfway through my senior year. Well, I shouldn't even say got kicked out. I went to federal prison. They didn't have a choice. I was unavailable for class for quite some time. I don't think they wanted to kick me out, right? I was almost a good son, man. My mom, I was, you know, great grades, varsity athlete, had lots of all kinds of great stuff that, you know, I was almost something she could be proud of. I was almost a good big brother to my little sister. My aunt and uncle made me the godfather of their three daughters. I was a good godfather to them way back there. You know, I almost could have made something of my life. I could almost look in the mirror. And there's a poem by a poet called Langston Hughes is this guy's name. And the poem is called A Dream Deferred. And there's a chorus in that poem that says, does it fester? Does it breathe? The boogie woogie rumble of a dream deferred. Does it fester? Does it breathe? The boogie woogie rumble of a dream deferred. And I bet I don't have to explain that to anybody on this call. Because if there's one thing we know about, it's that boogie-woogie, you know, that late at night, 3 a.m., nobody's there, no sponsor, no nothing, right? And we're thinking about the fact, I almost got a high school degree. I almost went to college. I almost, you know, whatever your almost was, right? And we all got them. And some little known stuff, by the way. And you guys remember that part of Bill's story where he's taking an evening law class, right? And it gets difficult and he starts not doing well. So he does what we do. He quits, right? And then the exciting lore and maelstrom of Wall Street was on, right? The shucking and jiving of trading stocks, money for nothing and chicks for free, right? And that's where Bill goes. Bill ended up going back and finishing law school. Never took the bar, never practiced law. But after talking to Father Ed Dowling, he didn't think he'd stay sober unless he finished what he started. because of the boogie-woogie rumble, right? It's not what we've done. It's sometimes what we've left undone. And I'm not saying that's the case for everybody. I think I've sponsored somewhere between 50 and 100 guys over the year. And it's often the case for them that there's some unfinished relationship, an unfinished goal, and unfinished, you know, something that allows us to pick our head up and put our shoulders back and look the world in the eye. I can't afford to be pissed off, because every second that I spend pissed off, right, I'm missing out on my life, right? And the same goes with fear that I want to talk about in a second. But I think resentment is the most important. They give us some directions in there, just in case somebody on here is deciding whether to do this and like looking for some directions. I'm not here to read the book at you. You can read it. There's really good directions. But it says, the big one I get is like, how do I get started, right? And it says, we went back through our lives, right? So if I'm going back through our lives, that, you know, right now, right? Christine, who are you mad at now, right? I am upset with, give me a name. And that's how I do it with the guy sitting at my table. Don't think. I want you to name the first name, right, that comes to your mind. Amanda's over in Australia. Amanda, who's on right now? I am upset with, boom, right? I want to hear that name. Put it on paper. Why? Right? And sponsees want to get into this. Well, I'm not so mad anymore. You know, I'm kind of cool with it now, but I was. I'm like, okay, who were you mad at? Let's talk about why you were mad, right? Just write that down. And it's amazing. Once pen hits paper, the magic of AA begins, man. That stuff just starts flowing and it feels good. I don't want to miss out on my life anymore, right? And I'm not willing to go through another day pissed off at Anthony while I'm trying to enjoy the surf out front of my house. You know, when I'm sitting out there on my surfboard, which is my big thing in life, I surf like 300 days a year. I want to have a clear mind. I want to notice the dolphins going by, which direction they're going in, the change in the water temperature, the clouds. When I'm going down the face of the wave and dragging my hand down that wave, I want to feel the face of God. I don't want to be thinking about, man, when I get to work, I'm going to really stick it to Anthony because of what he did yesterday, right? Because when I'm doing that, who's suffering, right? Me or Anthony? You know, he doesn't even know what he did, chances are, yesterday, because most people, like myself previously, go through life completely unconscious. They're unconscious that they hurt me, stepped on my precious little toes, any of that, right? So anyways, I'm done living like that. I like writing it around, talking to it. Of course, we figure out, you know, I call it the fourth column, you know, what do I have to do with any of this stuff? I'll tell you the girl situation, right? With this endless series of women that there was like four, five, six of them. And they all did the same thing, right? Snorted my cocaine, drank all my booze, spent my money, left when the money was gone, and cheated on me. And so my sponsor's like, well, what do you have to do with any of this, right? And I'm like, well, nothing. Didn't you get it? I'm like a giver, man. I'm like, they tread all over me, right? Like, talk about being taken advantage of. And he's like, okay, I can see that part of it, but why don't you tell me, where do you meet all of these women? Well, duh, the bar. I mean, where does God keep all the quality women? At the bar. And he goes, okay, well, player, what's your pickup line, Captain Smooth? And, you know, usually it's like, hey, babe, you know, can I buy you a drink? And I make sure you see the big pile of money that's like illegally earned sitting in front of me. And I start buying you a couple of drinks, right? And then I go, hey, do you want to go to the bathroom over there and, you know, do a little something, you know? And then we go in and do that, and then after a little bit I go, hey, you know, you want to go back to my house? I got a big pile of that cocaine. We'll get a bottle. And you know, and then you get it. So shockingly to me, it turns, and I swear to God I couldn't see it until I sat there with the sponsor, he looks at me and goes, so you mean to tell me that when you're bait, right, your bait that you're fishing, right, I'm fishing for a woman. And when your bait for fishing for a woman is cocaine and money and booze, you're shocked when you catch a woman that likes you for your cocaine money and your booze? And I was. He's like, so you were fishing for a cocaine fish and you caught a cocaine fish and now you're mad about it, right? And I couldn't see that, right? And I'm the idiot out there, you know, leading with the chin, the book calls it, like in a prize fight. Of course you're gonna get punched in the chin. When you're looking for a woman that's interested in money, cocaine, and booze, and you catch a woman interested in money, cocaine, you don't get to turn around and then be all hurt when they leave you when the money, cocaine, and booze are gone. You got exactly what you were shopping for, right? And I did that time and time again, and I couldn't even see it, you know, that I'm the idiot that sets me up for this time and time again. And that's just one example, because I want to talk about some other things. But where I get to see right over at the very tail end of this, what I have to do with it. Because at the end of the day, I don't get to change any of those women. As far as I know, they might be out in the world right now looking for the next big cocaine dealer to live in his big house and spend his money and snort his cocaine. And that's great if that's what they're doing. But guess what I can do? According to that serenity prayer, I could change, right, what I do. I'm the only variable in this equation that I get to pray like hell to God, you know, help me change. That's 6 and 7. I'm not going to get into. Take away some of this, you know, goofy stuff I do over and over again that separates me from you and me from your other kids. Like, let's get rid of some of this stuff. And usually why I don't want to do that is fear, which is the next part of this inventory, you know, that I really want to, you know, spend a little time with tonight. In my life, where's that fear inventory so I can... If you're new and you want to find the fear inventory, 67, going into 68. And Bill says this thing, like, see, anger in my life, all of that anger, right? The tough guy nonsense. You know what that is? Anger is the bodyguard for fear, right? Anger is the guy that jumps up, the stage character that protects the scared little guy, right? Because I don't want you to see the fear, right? So I'll show you the anger. And then he says this neat line, right, Phil? He says that sometimes we think that fear ought to be classed with stealing, right? And I always turn to the guy that I'm reading this with, you know, because sponsees do the same thing. I go, do you understand that? And they do this, right? They go, yeah, yeah, right? That's the universal, yeah, I get it. And then I go, okay, tell me why. Why should fear be classed with stealing? And then they say something insightful, like, because they're both bad. I'm like, okay, because they're both bad. Why are they bad? Let's talk about this a little bit, right? And it turns out that fear ought to be classed with stealing, because what fear does is it steals, it robs from me the present moment, right? When I'm in fear, the one place I'm definitely not is in the present moment. So fear should be classed with stealing, because that's what it does. It steals the present moment away from me. What fear is that acronym, right? Future events appearing real, right? All fear happens in the future. There is no such thing as fear in the present moment. I've been, I don't want to gross anybody. I got a big scar across my stomach. I had a drug deal go wrong in Panama and I got stabbed. I've had guns pulled on me when, you know, there's right now, I got Norma on the screen in front of me. And if I do that at Norma with the real 9mm, you know what Norma is? She's scared of getting shot, right? Of getting shot. That's what's gonna happen, maybe, in the future, right? And if this was a real gun and I actually pulled the trigger and shot Norma in the shoulder, which I could tell you about, Norma would not be in fear of getting shot. You know what she would be in the present moment? Pain. She would go, ah! Ah, it burns. Ah, and what you are once you get shot, it burns, and you're just, ah, and now you're in a whole different thing. You're in the present moment and you're just experiencing pain, which is very different than fear, right? Fear is what was going to happen. Once it happened, now I'm just dealing with what happened. that's a super big deal, right? If anybody gets to that place where every time I start to experience that, I have that thought of like, hold on a second here. I must not be in my body. I must not be right here, right now. I must be somewhere else, right? Mentally down the road. And I'm usually somewhere else down the road, and I'm usually in self, because here's how it plays out, right? When I did this inventory for the first time, with Roger, my sponsor, as I just start off like everybody, he goes, you know, what, let's start with the first one. What do you have? And nothing's too stupid, you know, write it all down. And my first thing was snakes, right? I'm like, snakes. Because you want to start off with something, right? That you see how your sponsor reacts. You don't want to give up, you know, something too much. So we start off with these kind of goofy ones, but they're real, right? And he goes, well, why are you scared of snakes, man? And I go, well, I'm scared it's gonna bite me. And he goes, well, why don't you just jump away? You know, if you see the snake, get away from it. And I go, well, no, you're not really understanding what I'm saying. It's going to be like in the shed or something. It's going to be dark. I'm not going to see it, and it's going to bite me. And he's like, oh, well, that's very different than what you were just telling me. So what you're telling me is the snake is going to bite you. So something bad's going to happen, and there's nothing you can do about it. Is that what you're telling me? And I'm like, I guess it is, right? Because if I saw the snake, I'd walk around it. If I knew it was going to bite, I'd jump away, right? But what I'm actually scared of is that this thing is going to happen, and this is the big part, and there's nothing I can do about it. Well, I'm scared I'm going to get laid off or furloughed, you know, during COVID. I'm making this one up, right, just to be a current event. It's a fear of a lot of people, right? And my sponsor looks at me and goes, well, don't worry about getting furloughed. Don't be scared of that. Just show up early. Do a good job while you're at work, right? Stay a little bit late. Be the best employee that they've ever seen. I mean, you're sober. Be the best example of AA and be a great employee. And then don't worry about getting furloughed. And I go, no. You're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm going to do all that. You know, I do all that. I'm going to do all of that. And the company is going to like downsize, or the shareholders are going to do something. And they're just going to do like, you know, random layoffs or cutbacks. And even though I'm showing up, and they go, oh, I hear what you're telling me. This is very different than what we started with. So what you're telling me is you're going to show up, do the best you can. You're going to do everything in your power to be a good employee. And you're going to get furloughed. There's nothing you could do about it. Well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm talking about. Well, what's next on that list? Well, I'm scared that my wife's going to leave me. Well, don't worry about that. Just be a good husband and lover. Well, no, you're not listening to me again, Raj. I'm scared. I'm going to love her. I'm going to be a big good husband. I'm going to do all those things. And she's going to meet like some young guy, some young stud or something, and run off and leave me with the two kids. And we're talking about something entirely different now. You're telling me you're going to be a good husband. You're going to be loyal. You're going to provide. You're going to be there for, you're going to do all of those things. And she's going to leave you, and there's nothing you could do about it. Well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying, right? I'm going to bring this back. I hope nobody takes my stupid examples as if they're not real, because all of those were very real things for me. And we ask ourselves why we had these fears. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? And that's where my sponsor was taking me. And that's where I try to get each of my sponsees. As they give me a fear, I say, tell me why you're scared of that, right? And then I propose a self-reliant solution, right? Oh, well, just be on time to work, do a good job, be the best employee, and you won't get fired. Oh, well, you're not listening, right? They're doing a 25% reduction in staff. It doesn't matter if I'm the best employee. They're just going to get rid of me. Oh. So self-reliance has just failed you. You're going to give it your best. You're going to do 100%, and this thing's going to happen anyway. So it turns out that is every single fear. If anybody on here, I promise you, anyone on here could give me a fear and I can bring it back to that within 1 minute, to where what we're really scared of is this thing's going to happen and I can't do anything about it. Because let's face it, if we could do something about it, we would, right? And then it goes on to talk about, as I've just demonstrated, that self-reliance, you know, it's great stuff as far as it took us, but we eventually get to a place where self-reliance failed us. It wasn't good enough, right? And that's also been the neat thing, you know, for these, you know, last 3 months, it's illustrated this point, like highlighted it really clearly for a lot of us, that as much as we thought we had things wrapped up, right? You remember that other sentence in the book that's somewhere in there that says, wasn't I really a victim of the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction out of life if only I managed well? And I'm willing to bet that I'm not the only person on this, you know, Zoom call that thought that life was going pretty smooth, man, that I kind of had it wired, right? I got this, you know, own my own business. I serve others. I go to my AA meetings. I'm a pretty good AA member. You know, I'm just one of, got a nice smooth life going. I mean, just couldn't even get any better. You know, it's all looking good, right? Because I got all the little pieces, right? All the little pieces of the puzzle are all lined up, right? Just the way Rich wants them. And it's all looking good. And then this deal came along and went, right? And upset the little apple cart that I didn't even know I had, right? If you would have told me 6 months ago, hey, Rich, I think you are a little, you know, you suffer a little bit from the victim of the delusion that you've created, you know, that your life is a certain way, that it's pretty comfortable, middle-class life, nice AA life, get to go to 3-4 meetings a week, 5 meetings sometimes, right? Wife's happy, kids are happy, couple vacations a year. You know, I would have gone, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not a victim of the, you know, I trust God and AA. And if you'd have hooked me up to a lie detector, I swear I'd have passed it, right? And now fast forward 3 months and I go, whoa. It sure seems that a lot of my happiness was tied up in being able to do certain things with you guys, right? Was my real reliance on the meetings or on God? Was it on you? Was it in going out to dinner? Was, you know, like, I've had to look at some things different, right? I've had a chance to go do some writing, you know, and look at me, which is the point of this, I think, for me. I love the line that says that Alcoholics Anonymous, certainly steps 4 and 5, but Alcoholics Anonymous is a program that allows for limitless expansion. Right, I get to continue to grow and grow and grow and get as free as I want to be. I get to get hopefully more and more self removed. I get to become more and more God reliant, so that as we face, you know, adversities and whatever, you know, I have one friend that says, you know, sometimes life gets lifey, right? And I don't know about you, but trying to homeschool a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, run a law firm, keep a wife happy, be quarantined in a house together for 3. There were some lifey moments, right? Life was getting lifey on certain days, right? And there's a lot of interest to balance and all of that. And where was my reliance? And I've gotten a good chance to look at that. The last part of these, you know, the step is they call it the sex inventory, and they call it that just to get us interested, right? I mean, if people are starting to fall asleep at the meeting, right? I always go, you know, now about sex, right? All you got to do is say that really loud. Now about sex. And everybody goes, huh? I just watched 3 people pick their head up, you know, right now on the Zoom, because I just said the sex word. And it turns out that it's a lot more right about relationships and how to have these relationships and what am I looking for in them. And, you know, and I talked about a couple of those women of where I started. And my first, it talks about forming a sane and sound ideal, right? An ideal is something I'm gonna grow towards, right? And it turns out that I can't grow towards anything if I don't know what it is. It's kind of like getting in your car and setting your GPS. I promise you'll never get there if you don't put in a set of coordinates, right? You got to know where you're going if you have any chance of getting there. So that's why we write this down. I don't know what my sponsor, you know, keeps mine. He likes to remind me of it. It's changed a lot over the years, my very first one, you know, with like 10 months sober, said that I'm going to never lie to a woman again. I'm going to be honest about everything. I'm never going to cheat on a woman, and I'm never going to be disrespectful. I'm going to treat all women with dignity and respect from here on out, but I'm never getting married and I'm never having any kids. And he said, you know what, buddy? What a great place to start. If you could treat every woman with dignity and respect and complete honesty, what a wonderful place to start. Let's keep that, right? And then it lets my sponsor, as I'm whining, right, about gross, as the years go by, and he gets to say things because he's my sponsor. It's what I ask him to do. Like, hey, where does this fit in with your idea? You know, your ideal was to be honest. Your ideal was to be monogamous. Your ideal was treating women with dignity and respect. You know, how's it going? Are you doing that in this relationship? You know, what, where are you? Right. And of course now, you know, as the years go by, I got married at 9 years sober, had my first daughter, I guess, at 11 years sober. And then the next daughter, 2 years later, and I got all these new, you know, ideals from this sex part of the inventory as my sobriety, you know, has grown as I've trudged this, you know, wonderful journey with you guys. That ideal has changed, as any ideal should. And he loves to hold up the first one, right? As I'm on like my third trip to Disney World with my daughters. And he's like, hey, Captain Disney, remember, I'm never getting married and I'm never having kids. Right. And they laugh and they hold that up and they cheer us on as we grow and that changes. But I think the point that I really want to make is to have one. Right. And if you set off, I want you to think about Columbus sailing across the ocean. If you set your coordinates to change by 1 degree, just 1 degree, right? I'm going to do this one little thing different in my relationship, whatever that is, right? Maybe it's that every Wednesday when my wife walks through the door, I'm going to say, God, you look beautiful today. And I'm going to give her a big kiss on Wednesdays, right? And it's just one little thing different I'm doing. And as we go across the Atlantic Ocean, 1 degree different, you end up on an entirely different continent than where we would have started, right? That little change over a period of time, right, becomes more and more and more. And if we don't have a coordinate that we're aiming, we'll never hit the mark, right? And that's been the value with that particular part of the inventory process for me in forming a sane and sound partnership. I believe part of my alcoholism, Bill tells me, the literature tells me that I lack the ability, you know, I lack the ability to form meaningful relationships with other human beings, right? And that's the journey for me anyways, is to try to form some meaningful relationships. So, recognizing that a lot of times I'm just scared. And when I'm scared, I'm in the future, I'm not here. And I'm always getting angry at stuff. And I got to get rid of that so that I get to stay here, right? And what's going on in this sex? Am I being selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? What are my motives in this area? What type of relationship do I want to have? My fifth step listeners prying this out of me and cheering me on through the process, which is my experience. And I guess the last thing I want to say with my 2 minutes is everything I've talked about, I've learned more and more and more about as I've heard more and more fifth steps. The way that my inventories get better is by hearing yours. You opened me up to levels of me that I could never see without hearing your fourth step, right? So I would actually proffer to you right now that it's really hard. You're going to be capped out, right? You're going to be capped out in what you can learn about yourself if you just do a fourth and a fifth step and never get to that place where you hear a fourth step, right? I think that's where this thing comes full circle. I'm helping others, but in turn, it enriches and fills in. I'm able to see things that I never could have until I'm sitting in that other chair. And My sponsor always teaches me, as a fifth step listener, listen for what they're not talking about. You know, listen to what they are talking about, but most importantly, listen for what they're not talking about, right? I had a guy go through a whole inventory and never once mention his father, right? And as far as I'm concerned, every inventory, any human beings that are ever written should have our mother, our father, anybody that's ever loved and cared about us ought to be on that inventory, right? And I go, hey, I can't help but mention, notice we've been here for like 2.5, 3 hours and you've never mentioned your father. What's going on? And he says, oh, I don't have any resentment against him. I mean, he left when I was 5. He's never been a part of my life. I go, really? How did that make you feel? Just left when you were 5, huh? Why'd he do that? Another woman? Does he visit you? Did he spend time with you? Did he come to your games? How about Father Sunday in elementary school where you got to bring your dad in and talk about his job? How'd you feel that day? What about high school when you got that award? What about graduation when he wasn't there, when you got that? How'd you feel that day? Let's talk about your wedding. What? And 5 minutes later, they're weeping, right? And it's the most important relationship in our life, right, that we've left out entirely because we don't talk about some of that sometimes. And I think that's the job of the fifth step listener, is to sometimes listen for what we're not saying. So it's 8 o'clock, and I love these two steps, and I love that you guys included me to participate in my recovery with your wonderful faces. And thank you for listening and the gift of your time. Good night.